We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hello.
Hub Arkish.
His expertise in football is second to none.
670 The Score's senior football expert.
You're talking to one of the great techno boobs of all time.
Executive editor of Pro Football Weekly.
This is probably too much information, but I always keep my phone in my back pocket. I just feel like my ass is buzzing permanently at this point. It's crazy.
Shaw media analyst and sideline reporter for Westwood One.
We've got Joe calling in from Elgin.
I just want to say that you are so underrated. You're fantastic. You really are. You've got a great opinion. I would listen to you all day.
Hub Arkish.
I'd love to poke you. I'm not going to now.
With Dan Bernstein and Leila Rahimi on 670 The Score. The Score.
On these Horizon Therapeutics Bears Mondays, we welcome Hub Arkish to the show at this time, as we do right now. Hub is on Twitter at Hub_Arkish, and he is with us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Well, Hub, Matt Nagy just got done talking, and he is in the building, grinding away, preparing for the next opponent. However, something feels materially different, and I know that it sounds like that you're there where the rest of us are, where it's all over but the shouting at this point. Bears don't make these moves in season, but I think we have, one way or another, recognize that we've come to the end of the Matt Nagy coaching tenure here, have we not?
Well, I don't know, Dan. I mean, I'm a step short of that because there are seven games to play, but I do agree that something changed materially yesterday, and that's where the focus probably should be and is going to remain. Even if you were going to make a change in season, you wouldn't do it with a three-day turnaround on Thanksgiving. But to your point, the McCaskey family ownership doesn't react that way. I think the concern now is you know, what is there left to evaluate? Back-to-back losses like that. Matt Nagy did not blow a coverage. He didn't miss a block. He didn't miss a tackle. But there were too many things out there that could have been fixed that might have changed the end result that didn't happen. And at this stage in his fourth season, you really have to question whether there's any reason to believe it's going to happen going forward.
And a couple of observations, Hub, that I think you've touched on since the beginning of the season. The involvement of him in the game and as a head coach, not necessarily the offensive coordinator, his presence there. And when you see what happened after the sequence with the timeout and the headset and then the punting and then what happened afterward, that might be as picturesque of an example, I think, as you've illustrated. When I saw that, I thought about what you've said starting from the beginning of the season almost immediately.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness to the guy, I think some of that is a little bit overrated only because the headset did go out to cause confusion. We don't know what was being said or what was being discussed. And with his headset out, it may be that he didn't send the punt team out there, that Chris Tabor did that because he assumed that was what they were going to do. We're never going to know that, you know, but it is that kind of the fact that these things keep happening, to me, it's the cumulative effect of it all. I tweeted at the time, he really was in a no-win situation there because, you know, personally, you know, at that point in the game at midfield, I kicked the ball, you know, but I do know that there's a lot of people who disagreed with me. A lot of people felt it was the right move to go for it. And the play call didn't seem bad. You know, that Wildcat had worked for them before. So I think that particular sequence is, you're right, Leila, it's a great example of the kind of things that keep happening. But that is a particularly tough one that I almost feel bad for the guy. You know, that all of that was going on at that time. And only he and Chris Tabor, you know, really know what happened with that exchange of going back and forth. He may have intended to go for it all along.
We all just heard what they said about Justin Fields, about the latest, and obviously there's a lot that they're not saying. There's no possible way you can start this guy on Thursday, right? I mean, it's Monday, and they can't even give us a diagnosis. They want to talk about his spleen and his gallbladder and everything else. How is there even a chance that they could be talking about putting him back out there?
Well, you heard my question. I don't know if you did or not.
Yes.
I think it would be malpractice. I don't think they have any intentions of doing that. But, you know, there is always the chess match and the game and the competitive aspect of it. There's no reason to tell the Lions that right now. Now, I think the Bears know he's not playing. I think the Lions know he's not playing. But why make it official if you don't have to? I hope that's all that's going on here. And this was one where you kind of had to be in the room. Matt doesn't always look you in the eye, you know, for the full answer of a question. But he did on that one. He was trying to make a point. And the answer he gave was mainly about the safety of the young man. So I don't think they have any intention of playing him Thursday. But you know, why tell the Lions that this morning?
When we talk about the feeling of finality or confirmation that we have after watching the game yesterday, and it's the fifth straight loss after we saw the 6-game losing streak last season and the 4-game losing streak the season before, I asked the question of Dan Mullion-Haw what they thought it would take for the Bears ownership to make a change and what that deal breaker might be for them. We saw the Bulls example when we heard the chanting of Gar Pax, for example, at the All-Star game and how that affected the public view of the team, the attendance at the United Center. In your opinion, Hub, what do you think that takes, knowing that this is a team that talked positively about a 6-game losing streak last season?
Well, I don't know that they ever talked positively about a 6-game losing streak. I think they talked positively about bouncing back afterwards and getting to the playoffs. And I don't mean to pick. That's just semantics. But, I get your point. And what will it take? The place was almost empty by the time believe it or not, even though the game was still in doubt, by the time the chant started, and you could barely hear it. I don't know that in itself is all that meaningful. You're going to get that. I think it probably is the way these back-to-back losses have happened. They're not football people, as you will, in terms of football management, coaches, X's and O's, necessarily the best, judges of coaching ability, but they do know the game, and they feel the frustration more than any of the rest of us the last couple of weeks. And to me, that was kind of, with that final gun, the feeling that maybe it's the straw that broke the camel's back. Now, the reason I stopped short of just in Dan's opening question saying, yeah, you're right, is because there's 7 games to play, guys, and I don't know if they'll win any of them. I don't know if they'll win 2 of them. But we've seen how strange this league is. They certainly, can and probably should win Thursday, and then you got 10 days off, and this thing keeps taking strange twists and turns. So I think that yesterday was probably too much to overcome, but right now we still got to wait, the next 4, 5, 6 weeks and see how they play.
If it is too much to overcome, if minds have already been made up, say Nagy's fired, how connected is he to Ryan Pace in all of this, or does Pace get another shot at yet another coach?
Boy, it's a great question, Layla, because I will absolutely make the argument that you need to at least consider hiring a president of football operations and giving them the option of retaining Ryan Pace as the general manager, which I know I've talked to some folks around the league say they would do, others who wouldn't, by the way. I'm not saying that that's a unanimous opinion, but there is some thought out there that this guy is actually a fairly good evaluator. He just needs somebody above him, and then let that person hire a coach. I would think that would be the smartest thing to do at this point, and you would hope that that's what they would do. And again, what I'm saying is the president of football operations, the czar, let them decide about Ryan Pace. So as much as it has felt for 3.5 years, mainly because it's Matt and Ryan who've tried to paint that picture, that they are absolutely surgically joined at the hip, I don't know that they are, and I don't see them. I think that it would be tough if they're going to react to fan pressure and media pressure and what's going on outside of the building. Letting Ryan hire a third coach is not going to be any more popular than keeping Matt would be. So I don't think that's really an option, but it doesn't necessarily mean that he's gone.
Let me ask you a procedural question here around the NFL sort of best practices. And this is theoretical, but it would help me understand the way a different organization might be working right now. If, in fact, the Bears have had some meetings right here, and they came away with this, and they said, all right, we're not going to do this in season because we're the Bears, but look, we're going to do this. And I don't know if George and Virginia and whoever share this with Ted and whoever else, but if, in fact, the people that matter know they're going to make a move at the end of the season with coach and or GM, what can happen now, right now, to make some of that process function better, more properly, or more up to league standard?
Well, I am never a fan of in-season firings because they really don't accomplish much unless you've got somebody on the staff who could conceivably be a candidate for the job. You know, if that interim guy is somebody who you say, okay, he's going to do a better job developing the – forget it, we're not talking playoffs or you know, seven-game win streaks, but we've still got all this young talent we want to develop. And is that being hindered? Is that being slowed by what's going on here? Then, you know, you make a move and you focus. Best practice is let's continue to take Justin Fields as far as we can. Let's continue to build this offensive line. That's the shame of this, you know, is that this is not, you're not looking at a rebuild. Some of that work has been done. The offense is actually relatively young and promising, you know, and while it's older, there's still talent on the defense. So the best practices is if we think we have to make a coaching change, and again, guys, I don't believe that decision is final yet. I think yesterday made it really difficult not to, but I don't think it's final. But if you think you have to, best practices is, okay, how is that going to allow us to continue to take the roster, our players, as far as we can, you know, and so this all, there's only really one guy on the staff, it's Mike Pettine, you know, who we have literally not spoken to since he got here in January or February. I don't know that there's even any relationship, you know, between the family or Ted Phillips or whoever it is and him. So that is a consideration. You're not going to bring somebody in off the street, you know, week 13 or 14. First of all, who would that be? You know, who's out there? And that's a waste of time because they're just going to spend, you know, 5-6 weeks trying to get up to speed. And that's why this is so difficult to do right now. It doesn't make sense right now.
Well, there's Mike Pettine and then perhaps Bill Lazor, but I want to ask this, though. Do you think that it would be worth having somebody different at the head coaching position just to see what you have in your talent? If it really is down to just a poor system offensively, especially when you're trying to evaluate people like Allen Robinson in a franchise tag year, trying to figure out Justin Fields, trying to figure out what you should be doing with the offensive line, who to keep running back-wise, and trying to move forward with the receiving core too.
You know, Layla, I don't because you've got to give Matt credit where it's due, and as ugly and unfortunately almost comical as this has been sometimes, he clearly has not lost his locker room. I mean, you know, these players are playing for him. They want to play for him. And now you hand that off to somebody else, you don't know what you're going to get. And as far as the evaluation part of it, that really is more in Ryan Pace's, you know, bailiwick than Matt Nagy's anyway. And so, you know, we've gotten to the point where pretty much all the doubters, all the people who weren't sure, you know, have come on board these last couple of weeks now that, yeah, it seems like there has to be change. But still, there has to be the time when you do it that benefits the organization the most. And so even if it is a fait accompli, relative to the importance of the timing, it makes probably the most sense to stay the course and try and continue to make these younger players get better.
There's a name that I keep thinking of, too, if you're going to mention Mike Pettine, as long as we're playing sort of pie in the sky here. Tom Herman is listed as an offensive analyst and special projects coach for the Chicago Bears, mm-hmm. head coach at Houston, head coach at Texas. He's 46 years old. Do you know anything about what he has done or is doing for the Bears? Is he ever in Chicago? To whom does he report? What do you know about him?
Dan, I wouldn't know him if he walked up and stood right in front of me right now. You know, all we know is that he was added as more offensive wisdom. I mean, to me, head coach at Houston, head coach at Texas, by the way, failed coach at both. That's not the experience of Pettine, you know, head coach in the NFL, a highly accomplished defensive coordinator. So, yeah, because of his background, he is probably going to be higher on a list that you would try and come up with than any of the other assistants, except for possibly Bill, maybe Flip, maybe John DeFilippo. But there's nothing that suggests that that is going to advance the organization over the next 5, 6, 7 weeks.
Tom Herman was 22-4 at Houston. He left for the Texas job, and yeah, you could argue what happened there, but he was good at U of H.
You know, to be honest with you, I didn't even know that. I mean, I knew he had been the head coach at both, and I knew that he got a promotion, so I guess that suggests he was good at Houston. But, you know, still, even if he had, you know, contended at Texas, that's not the NFL. And so, you know, I think that's the kind of experience that you're looking for in a situation like this.
What's the Fields factor in some of this now? Because if we know that somebody somewhere in the organization recognized you had to start Justin Fields. Fields is what matters about the organization now going forward. And we have no idea. It could be that he's got a floating rib that is near a blood vessel or near an organ, and he could be shut down for the year. Until we know, that could remain a possibility. How would Fields' lack of availability change any decision you may make about these coaches when Fields himself is so important and has so much gravity over the Bears' current situation?
You know, Dan, there's so many moving parts here. And by the way, I should have known Texas schools, you would have had me on that. I forgot that part of it.
Together we're a team, Hub. That's the idea. I'm not just here for my 1/11th with you. I'm here for 1/10th if you need.
There you go. That I knew. You know, Dan, you just raised the most fascinating question of all, because, guys, I'm telling you, I look at this football team, and we don't know who made the decision to make Justin Fields the starter when they did. I still find it hard to believe that that was something that Matt did on all on his own. And I personally still believe that had they stayed the course, gone back to Dalton when he was ready, continued to use the Justin Fields package and expand it and get him on the field more, I really believe this team would be 5-5, maybe even 6-4 right now. And we'd be talking about a different situation. And it's not, you know, I constantly get hit with this, you hate Justin Fields, you're anti-Fields. I love Justin Fields. I think he's going to be a franchise quarterback. It's the whole development of rookie quarterback syndrome. And so in answer to your question, what could happen here is they could go out and beat Detroit, and then with 10 days to get ready, you know, for the Packers, I don't think they're going to go to Lambeau and beat the Packers, but if they did, what are you talking about then? You know, I mean, a 7-game win streak, no, that almost never happens in the NFL. But it's not inconceivable that if they're forced back to Dalton, they could win 4, 5, 6 games. And then it changes the conversation again. So I'm not predicting any of this. I'm not hoping for any of this. But I'm just telling you guys, it's just at this point in the season, it's what makes trying to come to final conclusions so difficult.
We're going to have more with Hub on the other side of a brief timeout. Interesting times for your Chicago Bears and a Horizon Therapeutics Bears Monday. We are Bernstein and Rahimi. A lot more to come on The Score. We're talking football with Hub Arkish, as we do the day after Bears games, this being a Horizon Therapeutic Bears Monday. And it's hard to hold all these things in our head, Hub. We have big picture. We have what actually happened in the game. You know, we sit there and we watch and we take all of these incredibly intricate notes. And then we get to the end of it, at least. And I don't want to project too much here, but I look at it and I look at all this and I wonder, what the hell am I doing? Like, why, you know what I mean? Like, it seems like such a needless expenditure of energy to reconcile all of these minute specifics of everything we do with every block with the large scale winds that are blowing around this team right now.
Well, yeah, I hear what you're saying, and yeah, it's frustrating. Imagine how frustrating it is for these guys, but it's, you know, for those of us who love the game, it's kind of the fun part of it, and it's also the way to come up with, I think, you know, worthwhile objective analysis, real opinions. I mean, you know, you listen to the folks who don't, and you get this crazy stuff like, one of the things that gets me, guys, is nobody's talking about how poorly Fields played in the first half yesterday. And again, it's not because he's a bad quarterback or not going to be a great quarterback, but the question coming out of Pittsburgh was that the seminal moment? Do we charge forward now? Or like most rookies, are there going to be steps backwards? And he played one of his worst halves of football. You know, people want to blame Darnell Mooney for dropping passes. He had one drop. The second one wasn't a good throw. He overshot some people. He had a 77-yard touchdown to Darnell Mooney that he missed him by 5 yards over his head. And so, you know, you look at all these things, and I think the reason we do what you say is to make sure that you're looking at the big picture. And you know, it was funny. You heard the answer that Nagy gave as to why, when Dalton came on the field, two plays and boom, you know, and he credited the Rhino package and the tight end blocking for the Mooney, what was it, 70-some yarder they did get. But don't forget that that ball came out in about a second and a half, you know. And so these are all the things that we're trying to monitor and get a handle on and have a real understanding of yeah, you see, if we're going to go after the coaches, which we should, that's justifiable, then you have to have a reasonable idea of how good the talent is and who would win with these players, you know.
But I guess part of my point is,
this is all about.
I guess part of my point and part of why it seems so fleeting, Dalton's not coming back next year. I mean, he's not going to be here.
Oh, yeah.
And we know
yeah.
who the quarterback is. We yeah. regardless, we know that. Like that's yeah. so I don't know why I don't know. Like I can't concern myself at all with anything Andy Dalton does because this team's 3-7 and Dalton isn't on next year's team.
Well, correct going forward, but I mean, you know, I thought, well, let me just put it a different way. Looking at yesterday's game, you know, the belief was that if they win the game and you get this incredible gift laid at your doorstep that you're playing them without Lamar Jackson, and then you go to Detroit, you're right back in the middle of the playoff picture. And that's why you do it, because whether we think they're good or not, you know, whether we think people should be fired or not, if they are in contention and if they're in the playoffs, we're going to cover it. People want to hear it. And that's, you know, that's where we were at prior to that shocking ending for the second week in a row.
That's true. I also look at them having one of the hardest schedules, if not the most difficult in the NFL, because after that, it is against the Cardinals, at Green Bay, like you discussed, against the Vikings, at Seahawks, against the Giants at home, and then at the Vikings to end the season. And the Vikings are no slouch.
You know, Layla, I think, and again, injuries are no excuse, but and it doesn't change all the things that are wrong here, but most teams going in just yesterday without Allen Robinson, Khalil Mack, Akeem Hicks, and Eddie Jackson, clearly four of the, what, seven best players on your football team, are really going to struggle, you know, and so it's all part of it. And I think what you have to do to Dan's question and to his point is you got to separate, you know, what are we doing in terms of evaluating the future and what the promise is here, as opposed to the immediacy of the moment. And are they still contending? Because it's the goofiest thing in the world. But the answer is, in this NFC, the way it's going right now, in this NFL, everybody is still alive. And I don't think the Bears, there's any chance that they're going to the playoffs, but
I don't
technically, well, no, but technically, literally there is, you know, and that's why we have to do that. We got to be ready for it if something crazy happens.
Great college football coach once told me there are no turkeys left after Thanksgiving. And with a team with a 300 winning percentage currently, that does not bode well.
Well, hey, you know, it isn't about the mathematics of it. It's after what we saw yesterday, who are they going to beat, you know? And the answer is maybe the Lions. Then you get the Cardinals and the Packers. Are they going to beat either one of them? At that point, you probably can get mathematically eliminated. But until it happens, it hasn't happened. So that's the only reason for that conversation.
We heard Robert Quinn yesterday, and we enjoyed listening to him sort of fight with himself about how he was going to talk about what happened. And when Nagy started talking about the defense at the press conference where you were sitting there today, he says they. When he talked about the secondary and he said the bunch formation, it looked like it was Kendall Vildor's fault, but they have a way that they talk to each other. I wonder when the defense starts to wonder how to play without maybe exposing themselves to risk and injury right here? Because this is that time of the season. This is the time where a lot of guys are looking at contract situations and professional decisions when it comes to that level of buy-in, whether it's conscious or subconscious. And I'm not saying we've seen it yet, but it's always something when you are 3-7 going into a Thanksgiving game is something I look for.
Well, two things there, Dan. First of all, I could be wrong, but I think you may be reading too much into that because, again, I was sitting right there in the front row. He meant defensive backs, you know, versus defensive linemen, I think. That's all he meant by they. I don't think he was eliminating, you know, or separating the team. But then you get to the biggest question, which is the one time you do have to make a change immediately, the one time you can't play one more game or have one more practice, is when the team starts to fracture, when you lose the locker room, when they're not playing together. That has to be stopped immediately. That's why it was such a short window for Mark Trestman and Phil Emery. It wasn't just that they were kind of a comic duo. It was that they had the worst locker room in the NFL. And that's why even bringing in John Fox, which I thought was a bad hire at the time and proved to be, he immediately brought that veteran professionalism to the locker room, and they started fixing, you know, the culture and the chemistry and the communication, even though they weren't fixing the football. And so while, you know, Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace inherited one of the worst teams in the league, I think it's 14-37 in the years before Matt got here, at least they inherited a professional culture. And so when we start talking about they and them and the team coming apart, I think that's probably the most important part of all right now, because it is a young football team, at least on offense, and that doesn't seem to be an issue yet. But you're absolutely right. If that becomes an issue, you got to stop that immediately.
What more does Roquan Smith have to do to make the Pro Bowl after yesterday?
You know, I don't think he even needed yesterday. I think he's as good as any I've seen, but it is the primo position in the NFL right now. I mean, you look at it, and they're all clones. You know, we never thought we'd see an inside linebacker barely over 6 feet, 230 pounds. But, you know, you look around the league and you see the Roquan Smiths and the Fred Warners and the Devin Whites and Patrick Queen. And now you got Nick Bolton at Missouri. I mean, there's so many of these kids. I think that Smith is one of the two or three best and absolutely belongs in the Pro Bowl. But it's just a loaded position right now, and he's going to suffer from being on such a bad football team. You know, I mean, he and Devin White are very similar players. White won a ring last year. You know, Roquan's 3-7. When the all-pro voting starts, they're going to go to White before Smith. That's just the way this works. But there's no question that he is one of the premier defensive players in the game right now.
Hub, thank you as always. Appreciate it. Look forward to you joining us on Wednesday to take some calls.
All righty. Take care, guys.
Thanks, Hub.
That is Hub Arkish. I guess technically it's possible the Bears could make the playoffs. I just think they're bad. I think they're bad at football.
Just wait until they lose to the Lions on Thursday. Wait for that hellscape.
I just think they're bad. And I mean, I know there's all sorts of things that are mathematically possible. I'm not seeing it. I'm seeing it. The Ravens didn't have Lamar Jackson. They didn't have their best wide receiver. My God, and they're playing at home and coming off the bye, and they got a decent defensive performance for the day. I don't know. I think there's too many headwinds here, and they lost because they're not good at football, and the other team's coaching staff's way better.
I want to read a tweet from Adide Kinabala, who works for the NFL Network, because I thought that this was a really good synopsis of something we don't hear here. She said, "Stop with this Ravens are lucky junk. When you lead your division and have 7 wins, despite having nearly 20 starters and contributors on injured reserve," which we all conveniently forgot about their running back problem in the ACLs, "and pull out a win with a back quarterback on 2 hours notice, that's not luck. That's coaching. It's mindset and knowing how to come up with the big play." That is not something we hear here. That's not something we even know how to identify. And when Bill from South Shore talks about wanting to watch other teams, that's what he's talking about.
However, when it comes time for things we do know how to identify, I think our staff here, our staff of sleuths, is pretty good when they hear what they think they hear off mic, we must assemble the fart police next on The Score.
Uh-oh!
All right, we have work to do here, although apparently this one may not take every... I mean, it require every last bit of our sleuthing skill, as has been needed in the past. So I,
when was it needed in the past?
Believe me, we've had like Zapruder film, and that's the anniversary of that, by the way, 58 years of
disturbing,
like frame by frame, having to break down some of these things to determine. Look, there's, and then you get after the fact, and the way that this can be argued, at least in appellate court cases, could be all the way to the Supreme Fart Court. Is, you know, whether
the fort?
Whether it's
just call it the fort,
whether it's he who smelt it, dealt it, or whether the alternative doctrine of he who denied it supplied it. There's a lot of case law in this, and there's a lot of preparation that goes into it. We have actual clerks here that do a lot of our back, you know, case law work before we actually present everything. So that's why we've had Rick and Mike who've been busy with this.
Yeah, Sunday, this was alerted to me. It was a lot of us were watching the Bulls yesterday because we needed ye olde palate cleanser.
We'd rather watch the Bulls because they don't make us want to throw up.
Right. So this was first quarter, first drive, I believe, of Sunday Night Football in L.A. And thank you to NBC for their pristine equipment that made this such a slam dunk.
Looked like that foot kind of stepped on Freiermuth and slid out of bounds.
So a near pick, near catch, second down and 10.
Okay. Wait a second here. First of all, yeah, definitely. However, that's a hot field mic. I don't know that that's from
definitely
the...
Definitely hot.
I don't know that that's from the booth. Because that's a whole offensive line full of guys. You got that parabolic mic there. I mean, you could... It could be Chris, could be Al.
Definitely could
Ray,
be Al.
Ray, no. 44.
No.
See, it sounded like
I
closer.
I don't think it's the booth.
Okay. See, I thought it sounded like a little different than the on field. So I was thinking it was the booth. Maybe somebody had a little bit of, you know, that extra bit of hot sauce in their pregame meal. So it was like the 12:30 mark of the first quarter. And we're already there?
Looked like that. Foot kind of stepped on Freiermuth and slid out of bounds.
Hey, Ray, no. 44.
So a near pick, near catch, second down and 10.
That could be Ben, right?
Roethlisberger?
Yeah.
At his age? Of course.
That's what I mean. Sure, you don't care. You're on the field and you never know. You know, especially because your abs are tightening when you're calling out your cadence.
Let's think about this, though. Let's think this through. For it to be that perfect to pick up from a field mic, whoever was standing next to the field mic and not even holding it, because that's the opposite direction of the sound. A field mic is a parabolic mic, big old semicircle, looks like a satellite dish. It's collecting whatever is going into that microphone. So it would have had to have been somebody standing near it in order to get it that well audio-wise on the field.
Could it be the parabolic mic operator?
No, that's what I'm saying, because he's standing or she's
Oh, because that's in front of... Right.
Microphone.
I see what you mean, because it's not going to pick that up at all.
So could it have been the chain gang, maybe?
That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. Did we have the punter named Sam Cook, actually?
Yeah.
So we go full Sam Cook there. Yeah, that would be the unlikely culprit. Would be somebody standing right there.
I mean, it's not the youngest of people generally that are holding the old down markers and whatever. So
it's so true. It is like the same dude times 95 who is in the NFL doing that job.
Yep. So, I mean, you know, maybe there was too much or too little fiber on a given day before the before the game, and, you know, things became problematic.
That's not really, that didn't sound problematic.
No.
That sounded trustworthy.
It also sounded like the noise I make when describing things I don't enjoy talking about.
First and goal.
Wait, that's different.
That's a different one.
That was a different one, yeah. I thought I heard it at the end there.
That was like a honk. No.
That was our one.
What's now the Mike's other
just
one
now Mike's just confusing people. We have to maintain fart integrity.
Yeah,
here.
Really? Come on,
sorry,
man.
That's on me.
Pull it together. The hell you think we're doing
Ray,
here?
Ray, Ray, you know. 44.
Yeah, I
think most like Boomer Gen X something or another line just got issued in the Twitch chat by Jerry 505. Yeah, like millennials don't fart.
It's
Boomer versus Millennial fart fight.
I like that every generation after Millennial has gotten to completely skate by the way.
Sure.
That's a whole
no, they
thing.
Haven't. They're making a whole generation of women paranoid about their side parts and skinny jeans. Haven't you noticed that? Fashion bloggers are freaking out.
I'm just saying, like, it's everybody talks about millennials as if it's, you know, like a term instead of an actual like the actual generation. So whatever the generations are after that, it's like, nah, they're fine. But millennials though.
Yeah, it's all our fault.
Are millennials old now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we are.
I thought millennial meant you were born after 95.
No, 80.
Oh.
It was like 83 or 4.
Yeah.
Well,
because that's what's the weird part about it is the early ones, like I think I'm probably on the last bit of it where I remember before cell phones and I remember pre-cable and all that kind of stuff.
And how are you handling the skinny jeans and the side part?
Not great.
I don't care if you know, they, you, I don't care
up,
if they
you
call
stitch
me old.
Some of them together and you know what I call those? Pants that fit.
Interesting concept.
Mm-hmm.
I wear a variety of jeans, but I don't do it for the kids because to them I'm old anyway. So what does it matter?
You remember in Everybody Loves Raymond, where I think it was Thanksgiving, right? And he goes, Marie, where are my eating pants? And she says, what? My eating pants, where are they? And she goes, he doesn't know it. They're maternity pants. I got them for him a while ago. He loves them.
Imagine not having all your pants, having the ability to be eating pants.
Yeah, I think it's a requirement that all of my clothes have a slight amount of stretch at least. At the very least, it's baseline.
And if it's not built in, I make it happen anyway.
Heck yeah. And to the really, really lame person on the text line telling us to stop talking about fart radio, hello! We work in sports radio. We are 12. That is the whole point, is to complain about sports and make fart jokes. Why are you complaining about this? Would you rather we talk about the Bears' offense? Like that wasn't giant fart in and of itself? No. We're going to keep talking about it just for you.
Everybody's going, how dare you talk about things like this? This is a Bears Monday.
I really do not understand.
Watch that crap yesterday.
The people who,
seriously.
The people who.
You are sullying the reputation of Chicago Bears football by descending into such filth.
See, this is a much better take. 217. As a former lineman, I can attest you'd be shocked at how much farting goes on while you're in a stance. Thank you.
That's why it's probably more likely is what I mean. For the quarterback to like take that opportunity, though, that's pretty gangster. If you figure, as long as you're screaming and yelling, and you got a chance to kind of drop one in there.
Hey, Ray, Ray, you know.
Lineman, yeah.
847. I define millennials as anyone who receives participation awards in sports, even if they sucked. It wasn't their idea. It was their parents' ideas to give out those stupid participation trophies.
And kids.
And who are the parents of millennials again?
And just stop.
Oh, that's right.
This whole thing about participation trophies, now that I've raised a couple of kids here, the kids know, they throw them out. They don't care. They know who wins.
They're for the parents.
They know why, exactly. The kids know who won. They know why they won. They know which trophies they save and which trophies they don't. And the ones they actually save and care about, they know they actually won something. The kids don't like them either. All these kids today, it's not like you're raising kids like, look, I want a participation trophy. I'm awesome. If the kid sucks, they know they suck.
No, it's for the parent.
Trust
who push
me.
Their kid into something they probably didn't want to do and feel better about their stupid decision they projected onto their child. But yeah, sure. Tell me that's millennials and not the boomers again. Mm-hmm.
That's Leila Rahimi. I'm Dan Bernstein. We'll do transition with Lawrence Holmes on this Bears Monday next on The Score.
Well,
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.